As you can see, I am wearing my t-shirt today. This is what I call business casual. Pastor Tandy, Pastor David have their style. I have my style. And this is my style. 15 years ago, they took away my tie. Now today, they're taking away my button-down Oxford shirt. I think I'll probably survive, so it's good to see Nancy just rolling in. Nancy was in a car accident this past week and shattered her ankle, and but she's here. We'll, now that I've called everybody's attention to you, we'll wait to get settled because everybody's going to be looking, who's Nancy? There we go. If there was a contest for the best humorous short story ever, the story that I'm about to tell you would have to be a contender. There was a teenager and his grandma who were out driving one day. Grandma was behind the wheel, and they were stopped at a red light waiting for it to change. Neither noticed when the light went green. So the guy in the pickup truck behind them honked his horn. Now that's where the confusion began, because you see, Grandma had a bumper sticker on the back of her Oldsmobile that said, "Honk if you love Jesus." So when the guy behind her honks his horn, she thinks he's affirming her bumper sticker. So she leans her head out the window, smiles, and waves at him, which of course just antagonizes him further, causing him to blast his horn along with several other vehicles lined up behind them. At this point, Grandma thinks a revival is breaking out at the stoplight, and so she leaves back out the window, gives a big smile, waves to everybody. At this point, the driver of the pickup truck behind her is absolutely livid. He shouts something at her and flips her his middle finger. Grandma thinks he's shouting something about sunny beaches, and she has no idea what his hand gesture means, so she asks her grandson, who is way too embarrassed to tell Grandma what it means, so he just makes something up. He says, "Grandma, it's a Hawaiian good luck sign." Oh, she says, now it all makes sense. That's why he's shouting about sunny beaches. He must be from Hawaii. So Grandma leans out the window and gives the guy in the pickup truck a Hawaiian good luck sign. At which point she happens to notice that the light has now turned green. So she hits the gas, roars through the intersection, and just then it turns red, trapping everybody behind her at the light. But as she drives off for good measure, she looks back, waves at all her friends, and gives them one more Hawaiian good luck sign just for good measure. The moral of that little story is, if you flip somebody off, you're going to get flipped off. If you shout sunny beaches at people, they're going to shout right back at you. It's what the Bible calls sowing and reaping. It's what Eastern cultures call karma. And it's what ordinary people mean when they say what goes around comes around. And that is the theme, the focus, the lesson that today's Bible story calls us to remind ourselves of today. It's the fifth installment in our sermon series on the life of Jacob. Let's start with a prayer. God, thank you for the life of Jacob and for all his ups and downs, because he reminds us of us. As the New Testament says, you've given us these great Old Testament stories to instruct us, so that maybe we won't make all of the same mistakes. Spirit of God, remind us today of the centrality, of the critical importance of this principle of sowing and reaping, we ask in the name of Jesus. Amen. In previous weeks, we've already seen how Jacob dealt sharply with his brother Esau, taking advantage of him in a moment of impulsive weakness to persuade him to sell his birthright to Jacob in exchange for a mere bowl of soup. Last week, we saw how on another occasion, Jacob was downright deceitful, impersonating his brother Esau in order to trick his dying blind father into conferring on him, Jacob, the deathbed blessing that was intended for his brother Esau. In doing these things, Jacob thought that he was getting ahead in life, not realizing in the process that he was playing with fire. Because as the Bible warns us, Hosea 8:7, they who sow to the wind shall reap the whirlwind. What we put out there in life has a way of coming back to us in spades. Jacob was about to learn that the hard way. Because after he had now stolen not just his brother's birthright, but also his brother's intended deathbed blessing, the scriptures tell us, Genesis 27:41, Esau hated Jacob and said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are approaching. He'll soon be dead. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." Someone who had overheard that then passes that along to Jacob. When Jacob gets wind of this, he realizes he needs to hightail it out of there and give his brother a chance to cool down. So Jacob and his mother Rachel hatch yet another scheme, persuading Jacob's dying father that he should instruct Jacob to travel back to their ancestral village so that he can find a wife there. That gives Jacob the cover that he needs, the excuse that he needs to suddenly flee home. By the way, this family of Jacob's, it's a piece of work, is it not? I mean, they could be featured in a soap opera and you wouldn't notice the difference. But Jacob now has his excuse to slip out of town. He travels all the way back to the ancestral village where he begins staying with Laban, his uncle Laban, his mother's brother. And there he falls in love with one of Laban's two daughters, his younger daughter Rachel, and asks for her hand in marriage. Laban tells Jacob, "Sure, I'll give you Rachel's hand in marriage, but first you have to work for me for 7 years. Genesis 29:20 tells us, "So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love that he had for her." Once he had completed his 7 years of service, he says to his uncle Laban, "Okay, fulfill your commitment to me now. Give me the hand of your daughter Rachel in marriage." And so verse 22 tells us Laban gathered together the people of the place and made a feast, a wedding feast. But in the evening, he took his other daughter, the older daughter, Leah, and brought her to Jacob, presumably covered by a veil. And Jacob went into her, into the bridal chamber. They consummated the marriage. And then the next morning, Jacob finally lifts the veil to gaze into the eyes of his beautiful bride. And oh my goodness, it's not Rachel, it's Leah. Can you imagine thinking that you're going to marry one person only to realize you've been tricked into marrying the wrong person? Actually, some of you may have had that experience in your life. You married somebody thinking they were one way, only to discover they're a completely different person than I knew. But Jacob had that experience literally. Jacob gets up in the morning, unveils his beautiful bride to discover it's Leah, not Rachel. Actually, years ago, many years ago, maybe 35, 40 years ago, before David and I got married, when I was still dating around, there was this person that I wanted to date. And I had his contact information, or so I thought, so I reached out to him, invited him on a date, only to discover I had confused his contact information with somebody else, and I ended up inviting the wrong person on the date. Can you imagine? Surprise! Talk about the messes we make. Anyway, if you think that's a shock, imagine marrying the wrong person. If you sow to the wind, you're going to reap the whirlwind. You see the irony of what's happening in this story, right? Jacob, who had impersonated his brother in order to trick his dying father into conferring upon him the deathbed blessing that was meant for his brother, now gets tricked by Leah impersonating her sister, tricking Jacob into marrying the wrong woman. It's what you call sowing and reaping. And Jacob, of all things, has the nerve to get angry about this, when all the while I'm sure the cosmic keepers of justice were laughing and saying, Jacob, what you have done to others is now being done unto you. How do you like it now? How does it feel now? Jacob was learning this lesson the hard way. What we put out there in life has a way of coming back to us in spades. You heard the rest of the story. Dawana read it a few minutes ago. Laban said to Jacob, well, if you still want the hand of my younger daughter in marriage, I'll give her to you as well, provided you work for another 7 years. Jacob does so. And now he has two wives instead of one. Two sisters, Leah and Rachel. Can you imagine the dynamic in Jacob's family? Oh, the tangled webs that we weave in our lives. This is, of course, a very colorful Old Testament story that's meant to drive home a deadly serious point. To put it in the words of Galatians 6, 7, do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for you reap whatever you sow. If you sow to your own flesh, you will reap corruption from the flesh. An elderly man who was failing in health decided to move in with his young adult son and his daughter-in-law and their four-year-old son, his grandson. As he settled into this new routine in their house, every evening there was family dinner together around the dining room table. But it turns out that the old man, in his compromised health condition, was a very messy eater. His hands trembled, his eyesight was failing, so often peas would shake off of his spoon and spill out onto the dining room floor. In his awkwardness and with his bad eyesight, he would sometimes knock over his glass of juice and it would spill everywhere, and sometimes food would even dribble out of the corner of his mouth. He was just a kind of a gross and messy eater in his old age, and it was inconvenient to have to keep cleaning up all these messes. So his son and his wife came up with a solution. They set up a small table in the corner of the kitchen where there was a hard surface floor so that if things spilled off, it wouldn't be so difficult to clean up. And that's where Grandpa started eating his dinner while the rest of the family continued having their dinner around the dining room table. Several weeks into this new routine, Dad walks into his four-year-old son's room one day and notices that he's playing, that his little four-year-old has set up a tiny little table in the corner of his room and put toy dishes on the table. Dad says to his four-year-old, hey, what you doing? With the innocence of childhood, his little boy says to him, look, Daddy, I made a table where you and Mommy can eat when you get old. Needless to say, Grandpa was back at the dining room table that evening. Because you see, that dad saw in his actions the reflection of his future. And he didn't like what he saw. What we put out there in life has a very stubborn way of coming back to us, often many times over. So if I don't like what life is giving back to me, maybe I need to step back and evaluate. Maybe I need to make some changes. But remember, this principle that we're talking about today, it doesn't just work in the negative, it also works in the positive. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 6, the one who sows sparingly will reap sparingly. That's what we've been talking about. But the one who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Jesus himself emphasizes this critical point in his teachings. Luke chapter 6, verse 37, Jesus says, "Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned." There are a lot of churches that need to commit this verse to memory. "Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven." We all need to be reminded of that. "Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put back into your lap," Jesus says, "for the measure you give will be the measure that you get back." True story. An incredible story. 10-year-old Kevin Stefan, living in Lancaster, New York. This was back in 1999. He was 10 years old. And he was serving as the bat boy for his brother's Little League baseball team. In the middle of the game, the next batter up was over near the dugout practicing his swing, doing warm-up swings. When Kevin was distracted, didn't see the player that was doing the warm-up swings, and walked right into his path just as the player swung the bat full force, striking Kevin in the middle of his chest. He slumped to the ground, unconscious. His heart stopped. Everybody was, of course, in a panic. Thankfully, the mother of one of the players on the team was a nurse. Penny Brown is her name. Penny came rushing out of the stands and applied CPR and thankfully was able to revive Kevin. She saved his life, thank God, in the right place at the right time. But the story doesn't stop there. Because you see, afterwards, as they were talking, Penny told Kevin and his parents, his family, "Actually," she said, "I wasn't supposed to be here today. I was supposed to be at work at the hospital, but this afternoon they unexpectedly called me and said they didn't need me. I could take the night off. So I was able to be here in the right place at the right time to save a life. Thank God." But the story doesn't stop there. Fast forward another 7 years. It's January of 2006. Penny Brown was enjoying a nice meal at the Hilltop Inn in Depew, New York, when she swallowed her food wrong and started to choke. She says, "I could not breathe. I could not take a breath. And my food, it was going nowhere." She started to panic. When people around her realized what was taking place, they started to shout for someone to help. It just so happens that a guy who was working in the kitchen of the restaurant was also a volunteer firefighter, well-trained in CPR. So he comes running out of the kitchen, throws his arms around Penny Brown, does the Heimlich maneuver, dislodging the food. She's able to breathe again. Thank God. So that she who had saved a life 7 years earlier now is the one who's being saved. But the story doesn't stop there. As the chaos settled in the restaurant, Penny went over to the young man, the 17-year-old man that was working in the kitchen who had saved her life, thanked him and said, "What is your name?" He said, "My name is Kevin Stefan." What? The 10-year-old boy whose life she had saved on the baseball field in 1999, now 7 years later, 17 years old, working in the kitchen and a volunteer firefighter, is in exactly the right place at the right time to turn around and save the life of the person who had saved his life. You can't make this stuff up. Sowing and reaping. What we put out there in life has a stubborn way of coming back to us in spades for good or for bad in our life. Now, of course, normally sowing and reaping doesn't operate in such obvious, literal, one-to-one ways. Usually, sowing and reaping happens in our life in ways that are less tangible and more mysterious. Just because I feed somebody who's hungry doesn't mean that someday somebody's going to feed me when I'm hungry. I may never experience food scarcity, and God may choose to bless me in different ways. Just because I give God a dollar doesn't mean God's going to give me back $10. God may choose to reward me in a different way. God may choose to give me something even more valuable, a superabundance of peace or contentment in my life. So let's not be overly simplistic as we talk about this sowing and reaping process. It is a mysterious process that usually plays out in less direct ways. Moreover, let's also remember that sowing and reaping is not the only powerful principle that affects outcomes in our life. There are at least several different core principles that all mix together and work together in complex ways to determine the outcomes of our life. It helps me to think about it this way. What are the major factors that determine outcomes in our life? Well, sometimes I do something that affects me, that comes back and affects me. That's what we've been talking about. That's the principle of sowing and reaping. But other times, somebody else does something that affects me, and that's called free will. The choices you make in life can affect me for good or for bad. Other times, something happens that God causes or allows to happen that may even be really difficult or cause hardship in our lives, because God knows that by going through that, we'll have the opportunity to grow and develop our souls in ways we never would have in any other way. That's what's called providence. Every loving parent has experienced that. At times when your child is about to experience hardship and you have to restrain yourself because you know that letting them go through that is going to give them the potential to live into the fullness of who they were created to be. God deals with us in the same ways. It's called providence. And then there are other times in life when something happens to us that is beyond our ability to explain through finite human logic. That's called the mystery of life. And the Bible reminds us again and again that there are going to be many things that happen in our life that on this side of eternity we will never be able to explain with finite human logic, because God is infinite and has put us in a reality created by an infinite God, and therefore it is only logical that there are going to be an infinite number of things that are beyond us. And so welcome to your life. There are these powerful multiple factors that all converge together and mix together and in complex ways determine the outcomes of our life. But what we're reminding ourselves of today is that one of those really powerful principles at work is sowing and reaping. And we see it happening all the time in life, which is why sowing and reaping is a principle that is taught in every culture and every religion in the world. It's real, it's powerful, and we ignore it at our peril. No, monkey, don't hit that lion. What are you thinking? As they say, paybacks are, well, you know the statement, right? Beware of sowing and reaping. A little girl, 5 years old, at her birthday party, is unwrapping her presents. She finally gets to grandma's present. When she unwraps it, what she finds inside is a water pistol. She squeals with delight and runs to the nearest sink to fill it up with water. Meanwhile, the little girl's mom says to her mom, Grandma, Mom, I can't believe you got that for her. Don't you remember how us kids used to torment you with water pistols when we were kids? Mom smiled, Grandma smiled and said, oh yes, I remember. Paybacks are heck. Sowing and reaping. Life gives us what we deserve, it often comes back to us in spades. Beware of sowing and reaping. But all that we've talked about so far raises in my mind a really important question. You see, sowing and reaping is about accountability. It's all about accountability. It's all about my actions have consequences. But the Bible teaches us that God is all about grace. Sowing and reaping says you get what you deserve. Grace says God gives me much better than I deserve. Which leaves me wondering, which one is true? Can they both be true? And if they are both true, how do they operate together? I'll tell you what I think, and please feel free to disagree with me. And I mean that sincerely. You know, sometimes in churches you get the sense that everybody's expected to think alike, my way or the highway. Just because a pastor says something in this church doesn't mean you have to salute and say that's the way it is. We need to own our faith for ourselves. We all need to, as the New Testament says, work out your faith with fear and trembling. So think through your faith for yourself. In many churches, you get the impression that if you dare to have a thought that's different from the majority, that the thought police are going to come along and whack you on. Not here at Life Journey Church. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And we really mean that. So feel free to disagree with me, but here's what I think. How can karma and grace be reconciled? The way I see it, karma, sowing and reaping, is a natural principle, and grace is a supernatural principle. Karma, sowing and reaping, tells us how our natural world works. If I hit that lion with a stick, the lion's probably going to eat me for lunch. That's how our natural world works. Karma is a principle that tells us how our natural world works. Grace tells us how God works. So that the supernatural and the natural are operating simultaneously in our life and intersectionally, by which I mean life is like a complicated dance between karma and grace. We do something, maybe that messes everything up, but then God makes the next move, grace. And then we do something, then God makes it, so that God's grace and karma are in this complicated dance. That's exactly the pattern that we see unfolding in the life of Jacob. As we've already talked about, Jacob took advantage of his brother and his father, and so Jacob got taken advantage of by his father-in-law. Paybacks are heck, sowing and reaping. Jacob got what he deserved. The trickster ended up getting tricked. Sowing and reaping. But that wasn't the end of the story. God does not abandon us to the messes that we make. God meets us where we are with all of our sowing and reaping, even in the pit of despair, and says to us, okay, you realize you did this to yourself, right? But I will never stop loving you. And I will never stop helping you. So let's see if we can't make something good out of this mess. And that's exactly the pattern we see at work in Jacob's life. Jacob tricked his brother and his father. So Jacob got tricked by his uncle Laban. Sowing, reaping, back and forth it goes. And because of that, Jacob ends up with a wife that he did not want, Leah. But the wife that Jacob did want, Rachel, was destined to only bear him two sons. Jacob, for his part, was destined to become the father of the nation of Israel. And we know from the rest of the story that the nation of Israel would someday be comprised of 12 tribes of people coming together. So if Jacob was going to be the father of the nation of Israel, he needed to have more than the two sons that Rachel was going to bear him. Where would those other 10 sons come from? Answer, Leah birthed 10 sons, so that the wife that Jacob thought he didn't want, that he got, so to speak, from his sowing and reaping, that turned out to be a really good thing. That's grace. That's God taking our screw-ups and making something beautiful out of it. But the story doesn't stop there. As the story continues to unfold, there's a lot of tension in Jacob's family between his two wives, Rachel and Leah, and that tension gets passed on to their sons. So there comes a point where that tension causes the 10 sons of Leah to decide to sell one of the sons of Rachel, Joseph, to a passing slave caravan to get rid of him. He's carried off into Egypt, never to be seen again, or so they thought. Bad things happening. Karma, look out. Joseph ends up in Egypt and through a complicated set of circumstances gets liberated from slavery and ends up becoming, ultimately, a senior official in the governance of Egypt, serving the Pharaoh as essentially the food commissioner in Egypt, so that when a terrible famine strikes the Middle East years later, when Jacob and his wives and his sons and their offspring are at risk of starving to death, they pull up stakes and they travel to Egypt because they've heard that there's food there, and there they encounter this food commissar, only to come to the realization that this is Joseph, the long-lost brother. And Joseph is then able to provide abundant food for his father, his mother, and his stepmother, and all of these brothers who had betrayed him, and all of their offspring, so that this incipient group of people that were going to birth the nation of Israel were not wiped out by the famine, but were able to survive. So that once again, God takes the bad that was happening and brings something good and beautiful out of it. That's grace. Yes, karma happens, but grace always gets the last word in our lives. One more wrinkle to this story. I know it gets complex, but stick with me because I think it's worthwhile. One more wrinkle in this story. We know that the nation of Israel was destined to ultimately give birth to Jesus the Messiah. What tribe of Israel did Jesus descend from? The tribe of Judah. The Bible refers to Jesus as the Lion of the tribe of Judah. Judah was one of Jacob's 12 sons. Who was Judah's mother? Leah. You see, the wife that Jacob didn't want, that was his payback for the things that he had done, this bad thing that he thought had happened in his life. She, Leah, by God's grace, was the one who birthed the son whose offspring would ultimately give the world the gift of Jesus the Messiah. That's grace. That's grace. Everywhere we look in the story of Jacob, as it unfolds in the book of Genesis, there is this complex dance between karma, what Jacob deserved, and grace. God gives us so much better than we deserve. At every turn in this story, supernatural grace is trumping natural karma so that karma never gets the last word. So that at the very end of the book of Genesis, Joseph, that son of Jacob who went through all of this bad experience being sold into slavery. At the end of the book of Genesis, looking back on all of this, Joseph is able to say to the brothers who had sold him into slavery, Genesis 50, verse 19, even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good in order to preserve a numerous people as God is doing today. Yes, our actions have consequences, but God does not abandon us to our consequences. God is always seeking to draw good out of bad. That's why Romans 8, 28 says, all things work together for good for those who love God, who are called according to God's purpose. Note that phrase, all things. It doesn't say all good things work together to create more good things. That's true, but that's not what this verse says. This verse says all things work together for good. All things includes the bad things that I do. So the promise of this verse is that God can and will, if I'm open to it, take the bad things that I do and still find a way to bring grace, to bring some kind of beauty, some kind of goodness out of that. So when you screw up, don't give up, because God's grace is always at work. Let me close with this. Jocelyn James had made a complete mess of her life. Over a period of 7 years, from 2007 to 2012, she got arrested 16 times for theft and for drugs. She was, for a period of time, on the most wanted list in the county where she lived, in Alabama. She, in her own words, describes her situation, quote, I was just living a really bad life, doing a lot of really bad things that I shouldn't have had no business doing, and I was just a really lost person. Arrested 16 times on the most wanted list. That's what you call bad karma. But then, while she was in jail, she found faith, and she started to get her act together. She got sober, she got out of jail in 2012, and she's been sober ever since. But after you make a really big mess of your life, you find yourself wondering whether and how God can ever again use the mess that I've made of my life to do something beautiful, something meaningful. Jocelyn got her definitive answer a couple years ago in 2020, one day when she was scrolling through Facebook, she came across a post that told about a man who was experiencing complete kidney failure, needed a new kidney. The doctors told him that it would probably take 7 to 8 years to find a suitable donor, and he didn't have that long. And so his family was praying for a miracle. So they put up this post, and they were praying for a miracle. Jocelyn says when she saw that post, she says, quote, I just threw the phone down, and the Holy Spirit told me right then that I had that man's kidney. She went and got tested, and sure enough, she was a perfect match. So she ended up donating her kidney to this man and saving his life. But the story doesn't end there. You see, the man that she donated the kidney to, Terrell Potter, was one of the police officers who had arrested her multiple times. He says, quote, if you had asked me for 100 names of people who might be likely to give me a kidney, her name would not have been on the list. It's just unbelievable that she was willing to do that for me. Now think about it. This is the story of Jacob all over again. You see, God took what she had done with her life, messed it all up, and took an encounter that she had with a police officer in the midst of all that mess up. But for her mess up, she wouldn't have encountered that police officer. But for encountering that police officer, she wouldn't have been so grabbed by that Facebook post. She would have just passed on by it. But when she saw, whoa, Terrell Potter, I know him, he needs a kidney. Boom. She saw her opening to do something really beautiful and meaningful with her life. Probably the most beautiful thing she'll ever do in her life came out of, was birthed out of, the incredible mess that she had made of her life. That is grace. By the way, Terrell Potter now says she's like another daughter to me. For her part, she says, quote, God restored me from the inside out, and to be able to give another human a kidney to extend his life is really rewarding. And now Jocelyn James has founded a nonprofit called The Place of Grace, where she helps women struggling with addiction find their path to recovery. What a beautiful example of how God's grace always gets the last word if we're open to it. In her own words, I want people to realize that there is help out there for them. It doesn't matter what happens in your life, God can always turn it around. Life is big, life is beautiful, life is complicated. Sowing and reaping works in powerful ways in our life, but so does grace. Yes, we need to be mindful that what we sow, we will reap, but we also need to be mindful that sowing and reaping never has to be the end of the story, because God's grace is always looking for ways to bring something good out of the bad that happens. So the next time you screw up, don't give up, because God's grace is still at work. Just ask Jocelyn, just ask Jacob. Thank God for grace. Amen.